to Berdi Beg, one of the innumerable Khans. But Berdi held the throne for only 2 years. Mamai had been plotting to regain his lost position ever since, hampered by the fact that he himself was not descended from the great Khan. Sasha knew, probably the Tatars' whole army knew, that Mamai had to defeat Dmitri decisively, or a rival faction in the warring horde would rise up and make an end of him. Men with everything at stake were dangerous. "This man is the holy Alexander Peresviet. Surely you have heard of him," said Chalubey. But his eyes were on Vasya. "And this other one? When I first met him in Moscow, they told me he was highborn, Alexander Peresviet's brother. That was a lie." Softly, Chalubey continued, "This is not a boy at all, but a girl, a little witch girl. Disguised as a boy, she deceived all Moscow. I wonder very much why Dmitri has sent them here, a witch and a monk. Spies? Will you tell me, Dievushka?" The last question was put to Vasya almost gently, but Sasha heard the menace behind it. His sister met Chalubey's eyes, wordless. Her eyes were wide and terrified, her face bloody. "You hurt me," she whispered, in a trembling, abject tone Sasha had never heard from her in his life. "I'll hurt you worse," said Chalubey placidly. It wasn't a threat so much as a statement of fact. "Why are you here?" "We were set upon," she whispered, voice still quivering. "Our men were killed. We came toward the fire for help." Her eyes were vast and dark, confused and terrified, her cheek crusted with blood. She bowed her head and then looked up at Chalubey again. This time, two tears cut tracks in the blood on her face. Sasha thought she was overdoing it, playing the helpless girl. But then she saw Chalubey's face slide from wariness to contempt. In his mind, he breathed a prayer of gratitude. Drawing Chalubey's attention back to himself, he said, "Don't frighten her. We came upon you by accident. We are not spies." "Indeed," said Chalubey silkily, turning. "And is your sister also traveling with you alone, dressed so immodestly by accident?" "I was taking her to a convent," lied Sasha. "The Grand Prince desired it of me. Our train was set upon by robbers. We were left alone, without succor. They tore her dress. They left us with nothing, save what you see. We wandered hungry for some days, saw your fires, and came. We thought to receive help, not indignities." "It puzzles me, though," said Chalubey with acid irony. "Why is the nearest advisor of the Grand Prince of Moscow taking his sister to a house of religion at such a time?" "I advised Dmitri Ivanovich against going to war," said Sasha. "In anger, he ordered me from his side." "Well," broke in Mamai briskly, "if that is so, then you will have no difficulty informing us of your cousin's intentions and dispositions, so you can get back to praying." "I know nothing of Dmitri's dispositions," said Sasha. "I told you." Chalubey backhanded him across the face, hard enough to send him to the floor. Vasya cried out and threw herself at Chalubey's feet, getting in his way before he could kick Sasha in the stomach. "Please," she cried, "please don't hurt him." Chalubey shook her off, but stared frowning down as she knelt before him, hands clasped. Vasya would never be taken for a beautiful woman, but her bold bones and vast eyes caught the gaze somehow and held it. Sasha, his lips bleeding, was disturbed to see the men's attention once more on her, in a way it hadn't been before, and she was encouraging them, damn her, to keep them from him. "Forgive me," said Chalubey calmly, "if I don't believe your brother." "He has only spoken the truth," she whispered, her voice small. Mamai turned abruptly to the Russian. What say you, Oleg Ivanovich? Are they lying? The Russian's bearded face was quite inscrutable, but Sasha recognized the name. The Grand Prince of Ryazan, who had sided with the Tatar. Oleg pressed his lips together. I cannot say if they're lying, but the monk's tale seems more likely than not. Why would Dmitri Ivanovich send two of his own cousins to spy, and one a girl dressed as a man? His glance at Vasya was wholly disapproving. She is a witch. She has strange powers, insisted Chalubey. She made our campfire burn unnaturally. She bewitched my horse in Moscow. All eyes went to Vasya. Her gaze was unfocused. Her lips trembled. Blood still welled from the cut in her head, and a lump was forming. She was crying softly. Indeed, said Oleg after a telling silence. She is a fearful sight. What is the girl's name? The last was in Russian. Vasya looked blank and didn't answer. Chalubey raised his hand once more, but Oleg's voice caught him before the blow fell. Do you strike bound girls now? I told you, said Chalubey angry. She is a witch. I see no evidence of it, said Oleg. I will add that it is late, and perhaps we can determine their fate in the morning. I will occupy myself with them, said Chalubey. In his eyes was an eager light, the memory of Moscow's humiliations fresh. Perhaps he was curious about the green-eyed girl who dressed as a boy. Perhaps he'd even been there, on the river that day, when Cassian exposed her secret before all Moscow in the cruelest way possible. Dmitri Ivanovich will ransom her, said Sasha, if she is unharmed. They ignored him. Very well, said Mamai. Occupy yourself with them and tell me what you learn. Oleg Ivanovich. The Metropolitan will have something to say if he dies under torture, said Oleg. Sasha took a steadying breath. See that he lives, Mamai added to Chalubey. General, Oleg said to Mamai, his eyes on Vasya once more. I will keep the girl with me this night. Perhaps, separated from her brother, alone and afraid, she will say more to me. Chalubey looked put out. He had his mouth open to speak, but Mamai forestalled him, looking amused. As you like. Skinny, though, isn't she? Oleg bowed and hauled Vasya to her feet. Vasya hadn't understood most of the conversation, as it had been largely in Tatar. Her eyes locked on Sasha. Don't be afraid, he said. Cold comfort. She wasn't afraid for herself. She was afraid for him. Chapter 27 Oleg of Ryazan. Outside Mamai's tent, Oleg hissed between his teeth. Two armed men appeared and followed them. They looked Vasya over curiously before schooling their faces to blankness. She was terrified for her brother. It had all happened too fast. Midnight might mock and threaten, but Vasya had never dreamed that her great-grandmother's servant would betray her to the Tatars. Why, in God's name? You failed, Midnight had said. Oleg pulled her onward. She tried to think. If she could get herself away, could she come back for her brother at the next day's midnight? In this great camp, face sticky with blood, magic seemed as distant as the uncaring stars. Another round tent, smaller than Mamai's, loomed out of the dark. Oleg thrust her through the flap, followed her in, dismissed his dubious-looking attendants. No stove this time, and only a single clay lamp. She had a brief impression of an austere space, a neat heap of furs, and then Oleg spoke. Traveling to a convent, are you? Dressed so? Set upon by bandits? Then you and your brother were foolish enough to stumble on Chalubey's fire? Am I a fool? Tell me the truth, girl. She tried to collect her wits. My brother told you the truth, she said.
You're no coward, I'll give you that.
His voice quieted.
Devushka, I can help you, but I must have the truth.
Vasya let her eyes fill. It wasn't difficult. Her head ached abominably.
We told you, she whispered again. Fine, said Oleg. Just as you like. I will give you back to Chelubey tomorrow, and he will get the truth out of you.
He sat down to take off his boots. Vasya watched him a moment. You are a man of Rus, fighting on the enemy side, she said. Do you expect me to trust you? Oleg looked up.
I am fighting beside the horde, he said, very precisely, laying a boot aside. Because I am not eager, as Dmitri Ivanovich seems to be, to have my city razed, my people carried off as slaves. That doesn't mean I cannot help you, nor does it mean that I won't see you suffer greatly if you cross me.
The second boot joined the first, and then he pulled his cap off, tossed it on a heap of furs. He looked her over, his glance appraising.
Forget, she thought. Forget he can see you. But she couldn't focus her mind.
There was a white-hot bar of pain in her head. His feet bare, Oleg stalked over to her. Wordless, he took her bound wrists in one hand and felt her over for other weapons with the other. She was unarmed. Someone had taken her knife after she was struck down beside Chelubey's fire.
Well, he said as he ran his hands down her body. I suppose you are a girl after all.
She stamped on his foot. He struck her across the face. When she came to, she found herself sprawled on the ground. He'd cut her bonds. She raised her head. He was sitting on his heap of furs, running a whetstone over the unsheathed sword across his knees.
Awake, he said. Let's start again. Tell me the truth, Devushka.
She hauled herself laboriously to her feet.
Or what? Are you going to torture me?
A flicker of distaste crossed his face.
It might not occur to you, determined as you are to suffer nobly, but you are better off with me than with Chelubey. He was shamed in Moscow. The whole army knows the tale. He will torture you. And if he is feeling inspired, perhaps he will force you, in front of your brother, to pass along a little share of the humiliation. Is that my choice, then? Be raped publicly there, or privately here?
He snorted.
Fortunately for you, I prefer women who look and behave like women. Tell me what I want to know, and I will protect you from Chelubey.
Their eyes locked. Vasya took a deep breath and gambled.
I have a message from the Grand Prince of Moscow.
His features sharpened.
Do you? Strange choice of messenger.
She shrugged.
I'm here, aren't I?
Oleg laid sword and whetstone aside.
That is true, but perhaps you are lying. Have you a token? If so, did you eat it? I'll swear it's not on you now.
She didn't know if she could do it, but she made her voice steady when she said,
I have a sign. Very well. Show me.
I will, she said.
If you tell me why Chelubey said that Dmitri Ivanovich had devised a novel way to get rid of his cousins.
Oleg shrugged.
The Prince of Sierpukhov is a prisoner here as well. Wasn't Dmitri wondering where he had got to?
Oleg paused.
Ah, messenger, are you? Or a rescue party? Either way, it seems unlikely.
Vasya didn't reply.
In any case, it was bad planning on Dmitri's part, finished Oleg. Now Mamai has three of his first cousins.
He crossed his arms.
Now, what is this sign of yours?
Ignoring her splitting headache, Vasya cupped her hands and filled them with a memory of fire. Swearing, Oleg scrambled up and back from the fire in her fingers. She was still kneeling on the floor.
She looked up at him through the flames. Oleg Ivanovich, Mamai is going to lose this war.
A ragtag army of Rus is going to lose to the Golden Horde?
But Oleg's voice was thin and breathless. His eyes were on the flames. He reached out to touch and jerked back at the heat. The fire didn't hurt her, though she could see the hairs on her arms crisping.
A fine trick, he said. Has Dmitri made alliance with devils? It won't defeat an army. Do you know how many horses Mamai has? How many arrows? How many men? If every man in Rus fought on Dmitri's side, he'd still be outnumbered 2-1.
But Oleg did not take his eyes off Vasya's hands. Vasya was straining every nerve through pain, through headache, to keep her face unruffled, to keep steady the memory of fire. Oleg had sided with the enemy to protect his people, a practical man, one she could perhaps reason with.
Tricks with fire, she said. Is that what you think?
No. Fire and water and darkness all together. The old powers of this land are going to battle alongside the new. She hoped it was true. Your general is going to lose. I am the sign of it and the proof.
That Dmitri Ivanovich has sold his soul for black sorcery?
Oleg made the sign of the cross.
Is it black sorcery to defend the soil that bore us?
She shut her hands abruptly, extinguishing the flames.
Why did you take me from Chelyabay, Oleg Ivanovich?
Misplaced kindness, said Oleg.
Also, I do not like Chelyabay.
He reached out a flinching hand to touch her palms, which were quite cool.
Dmitri's side has powers you cannot see, she said. We have powers you cannot see. Better to fight for your own, Oleg Ivanovich, than defend a conqueror. Will you help me?
She could have sworn he hesitated. Then a bitter smile spread over his face.
You are very persuasive. Now I could almost believe that Dmitri sent you. He is cleverer than I gave him credit for. But it has been a long time since I believed in fairy tales, Dyavushka. I will do this much. I will tell Mamai that you are only a foolish convent-bound girl, that you should be given into my household instead of sold as a slave. You may do your fire tricks for me in Ryazan after the war is over. Don't let anyone see you doing them. The Tatars have a horror of witches.
The agony in her head was rising again. Darkness came up at the edges of her vision. She caught his wrist. Tricks, gambles, deceptions deserted her.
Please, she said.
Through the mists of gathering unconsciousness, she heard his whispered reply.
I will make you this bargain. If you alone can find and save your brother and the Prince of Serpukhov, and do it in such a way as to make my men and my boyars question their allegiance, then perhaps that will be sign enough, and I will heed you. Until then, I am for the Tatar.
She wasn't sure if she slept that night, or if the pain in her head had merely sent her back into unconsciousness. Her dreams were shot through with faces, all watching her, waiting. Morozko troubled, the bear intent, midnight angry. Her great-grandmother, the madwoman, lost in midnight.
You passed 3 fires, but you did not understand the final riddle.
And then she dreamed of her brother, tortured, until Chelyabay, laughing, killed him. She came gasping awake in the darkness before dawn, to find herself lying in warmth and softness. Someone had even wiped the crusted blood from her face. She lay still. Her headache had subsided to a dull murmur. She turned her head and saw Oleg, lying awake beside her, on his stomach, watching her. "How does one learn to cut fire in one's hands?" he asked, as though continuing a conversation from the night before.
The pale light of early dawn was seeping in around them. They were sharing a pile of furs. She shot upright. He failed to move.
"Outraged virtue? After you appear in a Tatar camp at midnight dressed as a boy?"
She was out from under the furs like a cat, and perhaps the look on her face convinced him, for he added mildly, looking amused,
"Do you think I'd touch you, witch? But it's a long time since I slept warm with a girl, even a bony one. I thank you for that. Or would you have preferred the ground?"
"I would have," she said coldly.
"Very well," said Oleg placidly, getting up himself. "Since you are determined to suffer, you may walk tied to my stirrup so that Mamai doesn't think I've gone soft. You are going to have a long day."
Oleg left the tent, which he called a ger. Vasya's mind was racing.
Escape? Forget they could see her and walk through the camp until she found her brother?
But could she forget they could see him? And what if he was wounded? No, she decided reluctantly. It was better, wiser, to wait until midnight. She wasn't getting two chances. Oleg sent a man into her, carrying a cup full of something foul-smelling. Mare's milk, fermented. It was thick, clotted, sour. Her stomach roiled. When Oleg himself reappeared, he said,
"Doesn't smell like much, I know. But Tatars march for days on that alone, and the blood of their horses. Drink it, witch girl."
She drank, trying not to choke. When Oleg moved to tie her hands afresh, she said, "Oleg Ivanovich, is my brother all right?" He drew the ropes tight around her wrists, looking at first as though he did not mean to answer. Then he said shortly,
"He's alive, although he might be wishing he weren't, and he has not changed his story. I told Mamai that you knew nothing, that you were only an idiot girl. He believed me, although Chelubey did not. Be wary of him."
"At midnight," Vasya told herself, trying not to shake. "We must only survive until midnight." Oleg pulled her outside the tent, into the rising sun, and she quailed. In broad daylight, the encampment was bigger than a town, bigger than a city. Tents and horse lines stretched as far as she could see, half blocked by scrubby woods. There were hundreds of men. Thousands. Tens of thousands. Her mind would go no higher. There were more horses than men, carts on every side. How would Dmitri muster an army to match this one? How could he possibly hope to defeat them? Oleg's horse was a stocky, big-headed bay mare. Her eye was kind and intelligent. Oleg slapped the mare's neck with affection.
"Hello," Vasya said to the bay, with her body in the speech of horses. The bay flicked a dubious ear. "Hello," she said. "You are not a horse."
"No," she said, as Oleg fastened the rope about her wrists to his saddle and vaulted to the mare's back. "But I understand you. Can you help me?" The mare looked puzzled, but not unwilling.
"How?" she asked,
and jolted into a trot at the touch of Oleg's calf. Vasya, trying to think of a way to explain, was hauled stumbling along with them, praying that her strength would hold. She soon realized that Oleg was keeping her close in part to humiliate her, but also to keep her from the nastier elements of an army on the march. Perhaps he'd believed her more than he appeared, about having been sent from Dmitri Ivanovich. Perhaps he was even not so loyal to the Tatar as he appeared. The first time someone threw horse dung at her, Oleg turned with a deceptively soft word, and she was not troubled again. But the day was hard, and the hours passed slowly. Dust got in her eyes, her mouth. It rained halfway through the morning, and the dust turned to mud, and she was relieved for a space until she began to shiver, her wet clothes chafing. Then the sun came out, and she was back to sweating. The bay mare was persuaded to make Vasya's way as easy as she could by keeping straight so she didn't pull Vasya off her feet. But the mare was required to keep up a steady trot, hour after hour. She tugged Vasya in her wake. The girl was panting, her limbs afire, the cut on her head throbbing. Oleg did not look back. They did not stop until the sun was high, and then only briefly. As soon as they halted, Vasya crumpled against the bay's comfortable shoulder, shuddering. She heard Oleg dismount. "More witchcraft?" he asked her mildly. She hauled up her aching head and blinked at him resentfully. "I raised this one from a foal," he explained, slapping the mare's neck. "She hasn't bitten you yet, and now you're leaning on her like she's a plow horse." "Maybe she just doesn't like men," Vasya said, wiping the sweat from her brow. He snorted. "Perhaps. Here." He handed her a skin of mead, and she gulped, wiping her mouth with the back of her hand. "We go until dark," he said, putting a foot in the stirrup. "You are stronger than you look," he added. "Fortunately for you." Vasya only prayed she'd make it to midnight. Before Oleg could remount, his mare slanted an ear and Chelube cantered up. Oleg turned, looking wary.
"Not so proud now, are you, girl?" Chelube said in Russian.
Vasya said, "I want to see my brother."
"No, you don't. He's having a worse day than you," said Chelube. "He could make it easier for himself, but he just repeats the same lies, no matter what the flies do to his back."
She swallowed a wave of nausea. "He is a man of the church," she snapped. "You have no right to hurt him."
"If he had stayed in his monastery," said Chelube, "I wouldn't. Men of the church should confine themselves to praying."
He bent nearer. Heads were turning among Oleg's men.
"One of you is going to tell me what I want to know, or I will kill him," he said. "Tonight."
Chelube had brought his horse right up alongside Oleg's. Vasya did not move, but suddenly the bay mare lashed out with both hind feet, catching Chelube's horse in the flank. The horse squealed, shied, threw his rider and backed, eyes wild, two hoof-shaped gashes in his coat. Oleg's bay wheeled, rearing, and yanked Vasya to the ground. Vasya was glad of that, even as she tumbled painfully into the dust. No one would realize she'd done it on purpose. Oleg sprang forward, caught his horse's bridle. All his men were laughing.
"Witch!" snapped Chelube, hauling himself out of the dust.
To Vasya's surprise, he looked a little afraid, as well as enraged.
"You! You cannot blame a girl for my horse's bad temper," said Oleg mildly from behind her. "You brought your mare too close." "I am going to take her with me now," said Chelube. "She is dangerous."
"The mare or the girl?" Oleg asked innocently. The men laughed again. Vasya kept her eyes on Chelube. The Russians were edging up on either side of her, closing ranks against the Tatar. Someone had caught Chelube's horse. He was staring at her with a kind of enraged fascination. But then, abruptly, he turned away, saying,
"Bring the girl to me at nightfall."
With that, he remounted and spurred off along the dusty column. Vasya watched him go. Oleg was shaking his head.
"I thought Dmitri Ivanovich a man of sense, at least," he said. "But to spend his cousins like water, and for what?"
Seeing her face still white and afraid, he added with rough comfort,
"Here,"
and gave her a hunk of flatbread. But she couldn't have eaten to save her life. She thrust the food in her sleeve for later. The afternoon dragged on, And the men of Riazan began to experience something strange. Their horses were slowing down. It wasn't lameness, and it wasn't sickness. But though the men kicked and spurred, their horses would only break into a lumbering gallop, then halt a few paces later, ears flattened. Oleg and his men found themselves falling behind the fast-moving Tatar column. By nightfall, they were out of sight of the main body. Only the dust, faint against the green-yellow sky, showed the location of the rest of the army. Vasya felt battered in every limb. Her head was throbbing with the effort of negotiating silently with a whole column's worth of horses. Fortunately, Oleg's mare was a sensible creature, held in awe by the others. She was a great help in creating the delay Vasya needed. If Vasya was to be dragged back to Chelyabay, she wanted it to be at or near midnight. They came to a ford, stopped to let the horses drink. Vasya, with a gasp, knelt at the riverbank herself. Gulping water, she was quite unprepared when Oleg took her by the upper arms, pulled her upright, turned her around, hands still wet.
"All right," he said grimly. "Is it you?"
"Is what me?" Vasya asked. He shook her once, slamming her teeth together on her tongue. She tasted blood. She was reminded that whatever small kindnesses this prince chose to show her, he would betray Dmitri Ivanovich to keep his own people safe. He would kill her without a qualm.
"I protect you. Do I deserve deceit?" Oleg demanded. "Chelyabay said you'd ensorcelled the horse in Moscow. I had my doubts, but..."
A half-ironic sweep of his hand took in the vanished column.
"Here we stand. Are you doing something to the horses?"
"I haven't been out of your sight," she said, and did not trouble to keep the exhaustion and defeat out of her voice. "How could I have done something to the horses?" He considered her a few moments more, narrow-eyed, and then he said,
"You are planning something. What is it?"
"Of course I am planning," she said tiredly. "I am trying to think of a way to save my brother's life. I haven't thought of anything clever yet." She let her eyes rise to his. "Do you know a way, Oleg Ivanovich? I will do anything to save him." He drew in a half breath, looking uneasily into her eyes.
"Anything?"
She made no reply, but she met his eyes. He pressed his lips together. His glance went from her eyes to her mouth. Suddenly he let her go, turned away.
"I will see what can be done," he said, voice clipped.
He was an honorable man, she thought, and not a fool. He might threaten, but he'd not lie with Dmitri's cousin. But that he was angry meant he was tempted. And he was angry. She could see the cords in his neck. But he didn't shake her again, and he had stopped thinking about the horses, which was what she wanted. As for the rest, well, she meant to be gone, and her brother with her, before the question was raised again. Oleg remounted, spurred his mare, yanked her on. There was no more stopping. It was full night, well after moonrise, by the time Oleg's Russians found their place in the host. Their horses were fresh, having enjoyed Vasya's game greatly, but the men were sweating, sullen, sore. Comments that sounded like good-natured abuse were hurled from all sides as the Russians straggled into camp in the moonlight. The exhausted men snapped at their restless horses. Oleg had not taken his eyes off her, Vasya was sure, for the last hour of marching. When they finally halted, he swung from the saddle and contemplated her grimly.
"I must take you to Chelyabay."
A little cold tendril of fear wormed its way through her belly, but she managed to say, "Where? Where is my brother?"
"In Mamai's care."
He must have seen the involuntary fear in her eyes, for he added roughly,
"I won't leave you there, girl. Work on the most ignorant face you can manage. I must see the men settled first.
She was left sitting on a log with a guard nearby. Vasya looked up at the moon, tried to feel the hour in her bones. It was late, certainly. Her clothes, sweat-soaked in the day's heats, chilled her now. She drew in a deep breath. Close enough to midnight? It would have to be. Her head was clear now, though she was very tired. The nausea was gone, the pain in her head. She tried to push aside her fear for her brother and concentrate. Small things. Little magic that was not beyond her strength and would not send her mad. Sitting on the day-warm earth, she forgot that her bonds were tight, and she felt the rope give. Just a little. She forced herself to relax. The rope gave a little more. Subtly. Now she could move her chafed wrists, turn them. She looked round, caught the amiable eye of Oleg's bay. The mare obligingly reared, squealing. All the Russian horses did. Simultaneously, they went into a very ecstasy of fear, bucking, heaving wild-eyed on their pickets, thrashing against their hobbles. All around, Vasya heard men cursing. They streamed over to the horse lines, even Vasya's guard. No one was looking at her. A twist, and she had yanked her wrists free. The chaos in the camp was spreading as though the horses' panic was infecting their fellows. She didn't know where Mamai's tent lay. She ducked into the confusion of milling men and horses, put a hand on the good bay's neck. The mare was still saddled. There was even a long knife attached to the saddlebag. "Will you carry me?" she whispered. The bay tossed her head good-naturedly, and Vasya vaulted to her back. Suddenly, she could see over the confusion. She nudged the mare forward, glancing back over her shoulder. She could have sworn she saw Oleg of Ryazan, watching her go and saying not a word.
Chapter 28 Pozhar.
Vasya whispered to their horses of fire and wolves and terrible things. Wherever she went, she left the encampment in chaos. Campfires flared, throwing out sparks. Dozens of horses, more, were panicking all at once. Some bolted outright, trampling men with their passage. Others merely reared and bucked and thrashed against their ropes. Vasya rode the bay mare through a wave of maddened creatures. More than once, she was glad of the horse's steady feet and good sense. Danger was a fizz in her throat and stomach. Darkness and chaos, she thought, were better allies even than magic. Drawing nearer Mamai's tent, Vasya slid from the mare's back. "Wait for me," she said to the horse. The mare put her nose down obligingly. The horses here were bucking, too. There were men everywhere, cursing. She gathered her courage and slipped inside Mamai's tent, praying under her breath. Her brother was there, alone. His arms were wrenched up and bound to the pole that held the tent. He was bare to the waist, his back raw with whip marks. He had bruises on his face. She ran to him. Sasha raised exhausted eyes to her face. He was missing two fingernails on his right hand. "Vasya," he said, "get out." "I will, with you," she said. She had the knife from Oleg's saddle. Now, with a single slash, she cut his bonds. "Come on." But Sasha was shaking his head dazedly. "They know," he said, "that you stirred up the horses. Chelubey said something about the bay stallion and the mare in Moscow. He knew it was you as soon as the noise started. They planned for it." Sweat had run down into his beard. It gleamed at his temples, on his bare, tonsured head. She whipped round. They were standing in the opening of the tent, Mamai and Chelubey, watching,
with men crowding behind them. Chelubei said something in his own tongue, and Mamai answered. There was something avid in their stares. Vasya, not taking her eyes off the two men, reached down to help her brother to his feet. He rose when she pulled, but it was obvious that every movement was agony. Step away from him, slowly, said Chelubei to her in Russian. She could see her slow death in his eyes. Vasya had had enough. She wasn't dazed with a blow to the head now. She set the tent on fire. Flames leaped from the tent flaps in a dozen places. Both men sprang backward with cries of alarm. Vasya seized her brother and pulled him, limping, to the other side of the tent, used the knife to slice through the felt. Rather than go out, she waited, holding her breath against the smoke and whistled once between her teeth. The good bay mare came and even knelt when Vasya asked, despite smoke and gathering flame, so that Sasha could get onto her back. He couldn't stay on the horse by himself. Vasya had to get up in front of him, pull his arms about her waist. Hold on, she said. The mare bolted just as a shout went up from behind. She risked a glance back. Chelubei had seized a horse just as she broke out of the smoke. Half a dozen men had joined him. They were riding her down. It was a race to see if midnight would come or her pursuers catch her first. At first, she thought it was one she could win. Her bones told her that midnight was not far off, and the mare had a good turn of speed. But the camp was crowded and churning, unable to bowl their way straight through. They had to dodge and turn. Sasha was holding on to her for all he was worth, his breath leaving him in a silent wheeze of pain with each fall of the horse's hooves. The plucky little mare was already beginning to labor under the weight of two. Vasya breathed and allowed the whole memory of the night of the burning in Moscow to come back to her, the terror and the power. Reality twisted, just as every campfire in the Tatar army sprang up into a triumphant column of flames. Dizzy, struggling to keep a grip on herself, Vasya risked another look back, trying to see around her brother. Most of the men pursuing them had sheered off, their horses panicking. But a few had kept control of their horses, and Chelubei had not faltered. Her mare's sprint was beginning to fade. No sign of midnight. Chelubei shouted at his horse. Now he was level with their bay mare's flank. He had a sword in one hand. Vasya touched the mare, and she sheered off, ears laid back, but it cost them more speed. Chelubei was herding them toward the camp once more, boxing them in. Sasha was heavy at her back. Now Chelubei was level with them again, his horse the faster. He lifted his sword a second time. Before it could fall, Sasha heaved himself sideways, tackled a Tatar, threw him to the ground. Sasha! She screamed. The mare's pace freshened at once, the weight off her back, but Vasya was already wheeling the horse round. Her brother and Chelubei were fighting on the ground, but the Tatar had the upper hand. His fist snapped Sasha's head back. She saw a glitter of blood in the fire. Then he was rising to his feet, leaving her brother where he lay. Chelubei called his horse, shouting at the other riders. Sasha dragged himself to his knees. There was blood on his mouth. His lips formed a single word. Run. She hesitated. The mare felt it and slowed. Just then, a streak of flame shot across the heavens. It was like a star falling, scarlet and blue and gold. The streak of flame dropped lower, lower, surged like a wave, and suddenly there was a tall golden mare glowing in the grass, galloping alongside them. Cries of rage and wonder from the Tatars. Bojar, Vasya whispered. The mare slanted an ear at the other horse, turned her other ear back to the men, riding them down. "Get on my back." Vasya didn't question it. She stood up, balancing on the bay mare's back as she galloped. Pozhar had shortened her stride to pace the other horse, and Vasya stepped sideways, lightly, and dropped to the mare's golden withers. The mare's skin was burning hot between her knees. A few of the oncoming men had bows. An arrow whistled past her ear. They were just inside bowshot, angling back toward the place where her brother lay. What to do? Miraculously, she had Pozhar's speed now, but her brother was on the ground. Another arrow whistled past her cheek just as she glimpsed the midnight road. An idea came to her then, so reckless, her breath caught. With the rage and terror in her heart, the limits of her knowledge and her skill so miserably evident, she could think of nothing else. "We have to get back to this same midnight. We have to come back for him," Vasya told the mayor grimly. "But we need to get help first." "You didn't understand," Midnight had said. The mare set foot on the midnight road, and they were swallowed up by the night. They would get back to the Tathra camp on the same midnight. She would not have left otherwise. But it felt hideously like she'd abandoned her brother to die, as she galloped through the wild darkness, trees lashing at her face. She sobbed into the mare's neck for a stride or two, in horror, in fear for Sasha, in sheer disgust at her own blundering, at the limits of her skill. The golden mare did not move like Solovey. Solovey was round through the barrel and easy to ride. Pozhar was faster, leaner, her withers a hard ridge, her stride a great heave and surge, like riding the crest of a flood. After a few moments, Vasya raised her head and got control of herself. Could she do it? She couldn't even have contemplated it, were her mind not full of the sight of her brother, bloody, surrounded by enemies. She tried to think of something else, anything. She couldn't. So she concentrated on where she wished to go. That part was easy and quick. Her blood knew the way. She scarcely needed to think of it. After only a few minutes of galloping, they burst out of the black woods into a familiar field, hissing with wheat half-harvested. The sky was a river of stars. Vasya sat up. Pozhar slowed, dancing, wild. A small village stood on a little rise, beyond the cleared fields. It was indistinct against the stars, but Vasya knew its every fold and curve. Longing closed her throat. It was midnight, in the village where she'd been born. Somewhere near, in his own house, was her brother Alyosha, her sister Irina. But she wasn't there for them. One day she might go back, bring Maria back to meet her people, to eat good bread, sitting in warm summer grass. But now she could not look for comfort here. She was on another errand. "Pozhar," said Vasya, "why did you come back?" "Diet Grib," said the mayor. "He's been getting news from all the mushrooms in Rus, as self-important as you could wish, telling everyone he is your greatest ally. Today he came to me saying you were in danger again and that I was a great lump for not helping. I went to find you only to silence him. But then I saw the fires you made. They were good fires." The mayor sounded almost approving. "Besides, you don't weigh very much. You aren't even uncomfortable." "Thank you," said Vasya. "Will you carry me farther?" "That depends," said the horse. "Are we going to do anything interesting?" Vasya thought of Morozko, far away in the white silence of his winter world. There was a welcome for her there, she knew, but not help. She might pull him, a shadow, out once more from winter, but to what end? He could not fight off an army of Tathers as he was and save her brother. She could only think of one who might be able to. She said grimly, "More interesting than you might wish." Once more, she wondered if she was being fatally rash. But then she thought of Midnight. What had she meant when she said, "We hoped that you were different"? Vasya thought she knew. At her touch, Pozhar wheeled and galloped back through the trees. Chapter 29. Between Winter and Spring. There is a clearing on the border between winter and spring. Once Vasya would have said that the cusp of spring was a moment, but now she knew that it was also a place, at the edge of the lands of winter. At the center of the clearing stood an oak tree. Its trunk was vast as a peasant's hut. Its branches spread like the roof beams of a house, like the bars of a prison. At the foot of the tree, leaning on the trunk, knees drawn up to his chest, sat Medved. It was still midnight. The clearing was dark. The moon had sunk below the horizon. There was only Pozhar's light, echoed by the gleam of gold that bound the bear's wrists and throat. Utter silence in the forest all around, but Vasya had the distinct impression of unseen eyes watching. Medved didn't move when he saw them, except his mouth quirked in an expression very far from a smile. "Come to gloat?" he asked. Vasya slid off the mare's back. The demon's nostrils flared, taking in her disheveled appearance, the cut on her temple, feet caked with mud. Pozhar backed uneasily, ears locked on the bear, remembering, perhaps, the teeth of his upiri in her flank. Vasya stepped forward, his unscarred brow lifted. "Or are you come to seduce me?" he asked. "My brother not enough for you?" She said nothing. He couldn't draw back, pressed against the tree, but the single eye opened wider. He was tense, bound tight by the gold. "No," he said, still mocking. "Then why?" "Did you mourn the priest?" she asked. The bear tilted his head and surprised her by saying simply, "Yes." "Why?" "He was mine. He was beautiful. He could create and destroy with a word. He put his soul in his singing, in his writing of icons. He is gone. Of course I mourn." "You shattered him," she said. "Perhaps, though I did not make the cracks." Perhaps it was a fitting epitaph for Father Constantine, to be regretted by a chaos spirit. The bear was leaning his head against the bole of the tree, as though untroubled, but the single eye was fixed on her. "Yevushka, you are not here to lament Konstantin Nikonovich. Then why?" "My brother is a prisoner of the Tatar General Mamai, and my brother-in-law with him," she said. The bear snorted. "Kind of you to tell me. I hope they both die screaming." She said, "I cannot free them alone. I tried, and I failed." The eye took in her disheveled appearance again. "Did you?" His smile was almost whimsical. "What does that have to do with me?" Vasya's hands were shaking. "I mean to save them," she said, "and after must save Rus from invasion. I cannot do it alone. I joined the war between you and your twin when I helped Morozko bind you. But now I want you to join my war, Medved. Will you help me?" She had shocked him. The gray eye widened, but his voice was still light. "Help you? I will make you a bargain." "What makes you think I'll keep it?" "Because," she said, "I don't think you want to spend eternity under this tree."
"Very well."
He leaned forward, as far as the gold would allow. The words were scarcely more than a breath against her ear.
"What bargain, Yevushka?"
"I will undo this golden thing," she said. She traced the line of the binding, throat to wrist to hand. The golden bridle wanted to hold on. It was a tool made to bend one creature to another's will. It resisted her, but when she slipped a finger beneath and pulled it just a little away from his skin, it gave. Medved shuddered. She did not want to see hope in his eyes. She wanted him to be a monster, but monsters were for children. He was powerful in his own fashion, and for her brother's sake, she needed him. Thinking of that, she opened the skin of her thumb on her dagger. His hand reached out involuntarily, drawn to the virtue in her blood. She drew away before he could touch her. "If I release you, then you will serve me as midnight serves my great-grandmother," said Vasya grimly. "You will fight my battles and connive at my victories. If I summon, you will answer. You will swear never to lie to me, but give true counsel. You will not betray me, but always keep faith. You will also swear never again to turn your plagues onto Rus, no terror or fire or dead alive. Under those conditions and those alone will I free you." He laughed.
"The effrontery," he said. "Just because my brother abased himself for your ugly face? Tell me why I should be your dog."
Vasya smiled. "Because the world is wide and very beautiful, and you are tired of this clearing. I saw how you looked at the stars the night by the lake, because, as you have noticed, I am like a chaos spirit myself, and where I go, disorder goes too. You enjoy that sort of thing, because the fight between you and your brother is over, for you are both joining my war. And perhaps you will like serving me. It would be a battle of wits, at least." He snorted.
"Your wits, witch girl?"
"They are improving," said Vasya, and touched his face with a hand she'd cut on her knife blade. He jerked back. Even as his flesh grew more solid beneath her fingers, his hands flexed under the golden binding. He stared at her, breathing shallowly.
"Oh, now I know why my brother wanted you," he whispered. "Sea maiden, witch's daughter. But one day you will go mad with magic, just like every witch, every sorcerer that ever lived. And then you will be mine. Perhaps I'll just wait."
"One day," said Vasya mildly, dropping her hand, "I will die. I will go into the darkness, into the wood between worlds where your brother guides the dead. But I will still be myself. If I am mad, I will not be yours, and dead, I will not be his." He breathed out half a laugh, but the gray eye was sharp. "Perhaps," he said. "Still, exchange prison for slavery? Wear the golden rope here, trapped by the priest's blood? Or wear it elsewhere, a slave to your will? You haven't offered me nearly enough to get me to help you." Pozhar squealed suddenly. Vasya did not look round, but somehow the sound gave her courage. She knew she'd never keep the mayor's loyalty if she took a slave, any slave, with the help of that golden thing. She took a deep breath.
"No, you will not wear the rope. I am not Kashchei the Deathless. I am going to take your oath. Will it bind you, Medved?"
He stared. She went on. "I imagine it might, since your own twin took your word. Swear to me, and I will free you. Or would you prefer sitting here to fighting a war?" Avid hunger in his face, there and gone.
"A war," he breathed.
She fought nerves, made herself speak calmly. "Between Mamai and Dmitri," she said, "you should know. You were the one that ensured the silver would be lost." He shrugged.
"I only cast bread on the water, Gyavushka, and see what comes up to eat it."
"Well, war is kindled. Dmitri had no choice. and you, lover of battles, can help us. Will you swear to me and come into the night?" She rose and stepped back. "Or perhaps you prefer to stay. Perhaps it is beneath your dignity to be